They're known as some of the original recyclers. The National Tractor Parts Dealer Association is a sponsor of the Business News Hour. With members in the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, and New Zealand, delivering ag parts to farmers and ranchers. NTPDA.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. Grateful you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to reside. With me is business person, author, founder. I mean, he's got a whole list of things that we could talk about relative to his work. His name is Jack Stack, and what a great name that is. So who can forget that? And Jack Stack is at the Central Iowa Business Conference, but this is something that you should hear worldwide, because we're going to be talking about how to create an exceptional company. Not just a company, but an exceptional company that people really want to do business with. And I think that's the secret sauce. Jack, welcome to the Business News Hour. Grateful, sir.
Great to be here. Thank you.
All right. So, International Harvester, a company, another company that you founded, Spring Remanufacturing Company, back in 1983.
Yes.
Authored three books. You know something, a little something about business.
I did hard time.
You're right.
I really did hard time. I mean, I'm serious, because when I started my career, I started at the bottom of everything. I started as a mailboy in a mailroom, and you know, worked my way through various jobs and assignments, and then I was running a factory in Springfield, Missouri, and all of a sudden the earth opened up and everything had a significant change of our lives, and that was that we were about to lose our jobs.
Really?
This was the Depression of 1983.
Yeah, recession. I remember it well.
It's for some people, depression. For us, When they laid us off and they closed down factories, it was a hard shutdown. I mean, just a really hard shutdown. And so we had a choice. We had to make a decision, and we made a decision and make a run for the company and try to buy our jobs. We knew nothing about running a business. We built
nothing.
Engines. No, we built engines, and we built engines, and we built engines.
So Jack, you knew something about inventory, right? Supplies in,
well,
supplies out.
I came out of the supply side. Yeah, I knew a little bit about inventory, but I never knew about costs. Okay, I mean,
what?
When I went to school to learn supply chain,
right,
it all had to do with days on hand, days of supply, lead times, process times, everything you could imagine, safety stock, but never money. We never had any access to piece part prices or total impacts on inventories and balance sheets. We were never told that stuff. We were told to build an engine.
So you're out there deciding that you're going to try to save your jobs from this closure of this company.
Yeah, downsizing.
I suspect, just guesstimate, that you're going to need capital to be able to do that.
Well, we didn't know that at the time. I mean, we thought that we had this seminarian attitude of saving 230 jobs, and this was the American thing to do. And we thought we were very patriotic. We never been to capital market. We didn't know anything about income statements and balance sheets and cash flow. So when we went out to try to buy our jobs and raise about $9 million is what we were trying to raise.
Wow.
We went there with a blueprint of an engine. We thought, here's what we do. Okay. And our mission is to save jobs. And they could care less. They didn't care less. They started asking questions about, you know, well, the biggest one that shocked me was, well, when are you going to pay this money back? And I looked at the guy and said, pay it back. I thought you just paid interest on the money. And so it was that particular point of time that led me to realize that there is a whole new set of specifications out there in that world, that it wasn't about the specifications of an engine. It was about the specifications of a business. And the people that were controlling all the money were the people that understood the specifications of the business and couldn't care less about the products and services. So I went to seek capital, like you say, and I went bank after bank after bank after bank, and I was turned down an incredible amount of time. But I learned all the way by writing different business plans, by putting marketing data together. Okay. And after about the 10th time, I came to the conclusion of, what is so difficult about this? This is not hard. This is easy to understand.
And you're a likable guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got all this stuff going for you.
Yeah, but I never had the confidence. I never knew what a business was, okay? And I had to, by rejection, I had to then rewrite it and then go back in. But you know what? I began to realize that there were two specifications. That there was a specifications of the engine, and that's what I was paid to do. And then there's the specifications of a business that other people were doing. And the other people in this company were doing a lousy job because we laid off 100,000 people in 2 years, okay? And not once did we really begin to understand the importance of cash flow and the importance of market share. And I mean, we were there to do our job.
You were building engines.
We were building engines.
What the hell?
We're good engine builders. Yeah, we're good engine builders. So we promised God and ourselves that if we ever got this business, we would teach people the specifications of a company. We would teach them how, in their own way, they can evaluate the strength of the company, the value of the company, and to be able to hit the benchmarks that they were capable of hitting. And what we realize is that there's no sense in having two specifications. Just create an outrageously successful company. Tell people what specifications you need in order to be able to attain this, and then get the hell out of the way. Let them do it. Let them take the ownership of the company, and they'll take it beyond places you will never even believe you could go to.
That would require finding those people. Or maybe they're already in the company, but they just haven't been given the tools?
No, with the 240 people that we started with, we had each one knew how to do their job.
Yep.
They didn't know how to participate in a business whatsoever. They didn't know where they belonged. They didn't know where they fit. They had, when I got done acquiring the loan, I was like a kid in a candy store. I felt like I had found the treasure, right? The Lost Dutchman's gold mine. Okay, I was going to be this pontificate of how this is a great system, okay, and how this system works. Okay, and I went out and I started talking to people, and they thought I was nuts. They thought I was crazy. I wanted to share this gift that I had just received, and they didn't want it, and I thought they were lazy. But you know what it was? They were not confident that they could understand it. They were afraid of it. They were afraid of income statements, balance sheets, and cash flow statements.
Yeah.
Something that was invented in the 1400s by Venetian monks. It's been around here for God knows how many, affected billions of lives, and still people can't read them. To this day, they can't read them.
Well, it's always what's inside the numbers.
Oh, it's the stories of the people.
Yeah.
That's numbers. That's what numbers are. They're stories about people.
Yeah.
And if you can capture the stories, if the people can write the stories themselves and they put it into the income statement, that's what was really powerful.
You know, we have people right now that you're talking about income statements and balance sheets.
Yeah.
We have people right this moment whose eyes are crossing.
Well, you have owners that don't know it.
Right. I mean, you have people that are going, oh, God, here we go.
You have so many CPAs here today at the meeting, at the conference. And I really go to them and I say, do you find it really interesting that, you know, what you know, the people that you're working with don't know? And they go, yeah, I can't believe it. I said, well, what are we going to solve this problem?
Okay. Well, then you put them out of a job.
I think they could be great teachers. I mean, I do think they could be teaching hourly, teaching salary, teaching leadership. You know, on, you know, how it all works and how it all comes together. I think if you got accelerated learning processes, that would be awesome.
Our guest is Jack Stack, ladies and gentlemen, multi-business creator and author at the Central Iowa Business Conference, and we're so grateful for the time from him. All right, so we've kind of laid the patchwork about what you've done in the past and how you didn't know Sikkim about the numbers and how you finally were able to get the $9 million to put this company back on track. And in your three books, you're talking about how companies need to not only know how to do that, but during your presentation here, what are you telling the people that they must do? What three or four things?
I guess what I'm trying to point out, okay, not tell anybody to do anything.
I understand.
Because we've had to live with it. It's one thing to talk about. It's another thing to have to live it 40 years. Because in our society, we eat our young. And if I failed at this, in the business, they'd say, well, this is the worst thing I ever heard in my life. But we have a literacy problem here. We have a financial literacy problem that just affects everybody in the country. It doesn't go by gender. It doesn't go by race. It doesn't go by religion. Okay, it affects everybody, okay? I mean, even 99% of the people that are abused, okay, are due to financial reasons, okay? Today, the Gen Zs, they're coming into the marketplace. They have no idea about four simple questions relative to financial literacy, all right? They get failing grades, all right? Even the Gen Zs are now coming in there saying, I think it's the business responsibility to teach us these things because we didn't learn these things before.
In school,
We've been teaching these things for 40 years. They've worked for 40 years. We have legions of businesses out there that when they got their people to understand it and get it, they not only got better at work, they got better at home. They began to understand budgets. They understood debt. Okay, and they never got themselves into the trouble that most people get into because they did plans. They did financial plans. They do life plans. Okay, these are the disciplines that you get at work because I think work is going to be the teacher. It has to be the teacher. All right, the kids aren't coming into work understanding this thing, and many of the business owners don't even understand it.
Okay? So where do they go?
Well, they go to the CPAs. They go to lawyers. Okay, they go outside services in order to be able to get it. And what they don't realize is that this is a competitive advantage. This will leap you in terms of successes and opportunities you'll never witness in your entire life. We have spun off 65 businesses
really?
Since 1983. Very much like you. Okay, we have this flair for if you've got leaders, let's find a place for them. Let's let them create their own business plans. Let's let them create their own opportunities. But if they got the scheme, if they understand the statistics and the specifications, they'll succeed.
Jack Stack, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. We're talking about success for business, understanding the numbers and what is behind all of those. Now, I got to tell you, there's a lot of business people, and I was trying to figure it out the other day. I think we've done over 4,000 interviews in the time that we've done the Business News Hour.
Yes, sir.
And many of these folks are very successful,
Yes, sir.
And many of them are working hard.
They are. And they're successful, right.
But they may be working hard, but they may not be successful going forward to build a legacy of the future. What do you have to do to be able to do that? To build a company that's got a successful brand, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, if I make self-weasel winding torque inducers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And I'm the best at making those in the world.
Right.
And my self-weasel winding torque inducers cost 13%, 15% more than my competitor.
Yeah.
And people are buying on price.
Yeah.
How do I combat that?
I'll tell you one thing you do is when you have the type of company that really understands the information is that you go out there and you bring the competitive data to your people, okay? Because nothing works better than competitive data. You got to take away the thought that the person thinks that the human relations manager, the CEO, does nothing but try to figure out how to get work harder with less money. That's not true. Okay, the problem is that we don't bring enough of the marketplace to the people. And you bring customers, but you don't bring the marketplace. You don't bring
Okay, let's dig into that. What do you mean by that?
Okay, let's say that your margins are just a lot thinner than the margins of your competition, and what you want to do is teach your people cost, and what you want to do is be able to get a better margin in terms of the marketplace. So what you do is you compare it to your industry, you compare it to your competition, and then you ask your people, what are they doing differently than we're doing, okay? I mean, we don't have to be rocket science. We don't have to be the greatest innovators, but we can learn from each other. So you look at the ratio, the statistic that you're totally unfavorable with. And then what we do is we like to put incentive programs out there, okay, that if people can lower their cost of goods, if they can enhance their margins, there's going to be profits that are going to be self-funding as a result of productivity improvements. So give them back a little bit by wiping out a critical number, right?
So the reward really is in...
You made the company stronger with a better margin, right? So when somebody now comes in and looks to buy you, they go, oh, your industry standard is 40%. You're doing 42%. That's awesome. I want to buy you, okay? I want to give you a high value.
and that's an amazing thing. So you have to have a great amount of trust among your people.
Yeah.
To be able to share this data.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The Venetian monks that invented this game, okay, made it somewhat, hard to cheat.
Sure.
Because it's got to have checks and balances, and that's what I like about it, See, what I like about it is that when our people are doing the numbers, when the hourly and salary, I don't have to trust accounting, okay? I mean, how many businesses have you been in where the accountant gives you something that's totally different than what you did on the shop floor, right? Does it infuriate you? Like, what happened between you and that last number? What accrual did they put in there? What decision did they make? Okay, what happened two years ago?
That stops all productivity.
Absolutely. It kills you. It kills you, okay? So I like the checks and balances, okay? I like the people in the shop to close the books, and I like the accountants to close the books. And if there's a deviation, they get together and work it out.
And how many times do the people who are on the shop floor understand it better than the accountant?
Well, when they own the number, okay, which is incredible. What we did is something really simple. We took an income statement, and we put it in a very finite form where cost of goods is spread out into general ledgers and things of this nature. And then every week, the people have to fill out the income statement in a group, in a huddle, in a meeting. Okay, our huddles, our communication tools, are to fill out an income statement weekly and have anything of material significance occur, we communicate to everybody. So you're in this room, you get called on for sales, you got to post it in front of everybody. Unbelievable pressure. The sales guy looks in and said, oh my God, I'm responsible for all these lives, okay? The cost person goes up there, and then she puts her number in there to determine what the actual cost might be. Then there's the actual cost, and then the shop gets up there and goes to labor, and they give you the overhead, they give you the material, they give you the scrap variances. So at the end of the day, everybody owns a line. Think about this. Everybody owns a line on the income statement. We allocate the line to the person. They come together in the income statement to join the team. And it's incredible when they begin to understand that they need each other. And they need it by seeing the results that they perform for each other in this open book philosophy. Yeah.
What happens? Now, most businesses, and I happen to be very much involved in the agricultural industry, as we've talked about off mic. What happens when we have individuals that are so entrenched in the day-to-day activity of just running the business than what they are in increasing the value of the business?
Yeah, that's just work. I mean, that is just more work. You know, it's the same thing about saying that sales without margins is nothing more than work, okay? I mean, really, what if you had the opportunity to get your entire team to work on that margin, all right? And everybody has an impact on margin. Everybody really does, but they don't know what the impact is. So you sit there and you just pass these cards. You love card playing, right? You just sit around and you pass out this information. They fill it out and they own it, though. Then they own it. They own it.
Yeah? So let's take this through a bit of a scenario, okay?
Okay.
So we have HR over here.
Yes, sir.
They're responsible for hiring good people.
They're the principal's office, okay? Let's be realistic.
Right.
They are. Anybody now in the old days, you know, seriously, I'm trying to change it. I am trying to get the human relations people to be the teachers of financial literacy. Okay, I really am.
The principal's office.
Well, they're the regulators. I mean, all kinds of laws and all kinds of health care and all kinds of safety and all kinds of regulation. They become legislative. They're not human resource people anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
They're the gatekeeper on the, yeah, right.
They're the gatekeeper for all the regulations. Okay.
But they've got a point in productivity.
But they got a seat at the table. Let's give them a seat at the table. All right? Let's give them the financials and say, I want you to come up with a more accelerated education process to get people to get this thing quicker.
Okay, so we've got those folks.
HR. And
you've just given the prescription for that.
Right.
We have the engineering staff.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the folks that come up with these self-weasel-winding torque inducers that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they can make an impact everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, from not only what goes in, but what comes out.
You know, even more importantly, in days of productivity where we've got people shortage, the best thing you can do right now, every time you need a person, get your IT, get your engineer, and have them sign with the HR person. Okay, what's incredible will what come out of that? Okay, it's unreal.
Because they'll all of a sudden talk to each other.
They'll design the position out.
Okay. So we have HR,
engineering,
mm-hmm. The production level,
yeah, shop, yeah.
The folks that are building whatever. This thing is.
Yeah, and they hold the key to the most valuable thing in any type of organization, and that's called overhead absorption. I mean, if people would overhead absorption, it's the most powerful thing to think about. I mean, if you think about our economy in terms of all the people that are working, and you say this is the number of direct hours that we're working in our society, and you divide it into all the social costs, you can get a cost per hour, okay, that maybe you can come up with a plan that says, look at, before we do anything else, we got to get this overhead cost down, and let's try to figure out how to work together to create more hours worked, less overhead, so we can have a better quality of life going forward. I think this overhead absorption inside of production is the most powerful thing for people to understand.
Wow.
Our people know that for every hour of productivity they can enhance, they save three times the amount of overhead.
All right, so we've been through HR, engineering,
production. Yeah.
Now we have the folks that are in middle management.
Yeah.
Lots of folks in middle management.
They're the hardest ones to change. Most of them are there for skill sets. Most of them are there for skill sets. Okay, they got promoted as a result of being a technician, a tool and die.
Because they do their job.
Yeah, they
knew
the skill set really well.
Yeah,
and breaking with that because that's our pride. Okay, you got to trick them into learning.
that's their job security.
Yeah.
They're faced with this.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So.
But now this is a mechanism by which they can also get their people more raises and more compensation.
Okay. Which
they can teach their people that, hey, our competition is doing it much better than we're doing it. Maybe they're working harder. Okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then we have the C-suite folks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who do you try to impact first? The C-suite? The accounting firm?
I think we underestimate the hourly people. Okay. We underestimate the fact that these hourly people love this stuff. They like to be smart. Okay, they'd love for us to talk to them about market size and market data, and they like the language of business.
That way they're involved.
They are involved. Of course they are. They make a difference. They're owners of the company. That's what we're looking for is more ownership, more pride, okay, more self-esteem, all right? That's what we can get by achieving. That's what we call it the great game, okay? It's all about, this inner satisfaction, but it doesn't stop at work. They take this home. They have better budgets. They have better, they understand finances much more because we have all kinds of financial classes for the people. Okay, they don't get into debt. Okay, and, we need to be teaching these things.
Yeah, it helps them in their own personal
life.
Yeah,
but it's like our government doesn't know anything about debt. It isn't like we don't have a literacy problem when it comes to it. But we try to promote financial literacy. And it became a competitive advantage for us.
Across the board, ladies and gentlemen, financial literacy in business. What a concept. But it works, right?
Who's else teaching it?
Right. Our guest has been Jack Stack, ladies and gentlemen. You can find out more. We will have links to everything that Jack does up on the radio blog. Jack, thanks so very much.
Thank you, Michael.
A valuable bit of information for people.
You're a great guy to talk to.
Oh, yeah. But, and again, we've talked to thousands of business people, and I don't know how many of them understand these processes.
The ones that do really well.
Yeah, and they can sell their companies for all kinds of money.
They're building value every day.
Jack, thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you.
That, once again, is the voice of Jack Stack, author, business person, and keynote speaker, talking about financial literacy and how you can have a booming business if everybody gets on board and understands the numbers. Fascinating conversation, and yes, we will have links to his website on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us, for all of us that put this together each and every day. Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease, and the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Jack Stack, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.